stadium erupted in cheers, claps, and whistles. Cruz had won himself some new fans.
"Do you want a drink?" Vigo asked me, flexing his shoulders.
"Yeah," I said. The atmosphere was hot and tense. We moved over to one of the food stalls, where the vendor handed Vigo 2 bottles of water, free of charge. A perk of being a warden here tonight, apparently. The water was deliciously cool as it glided down my throat. I breathed out in satisfaction as I downed the whole bottle in less than a minute. I scrunched it up in my hand and aimed it at a trash can. Vigo was slower in finishing his bottle. Now that everyone had a break before the next contenders entered the cage, he was alert again to monitor the crowd. I joined him in examining the audience. And that was when I noticed a child, a girl wandering down one of the aisles by herself. She looked no older than 5. Her blonde hair in bunches, she was clutching a stuffed bear to her chest and looking quite frightened as she gazed around. I nudged Vigo with my elbow, drawing his attention to the girl as I began to move toward her. Approaching, I bent down to her level before Vigo could, as I figured she'd take my advance better than his.
"You okay?" I asked. "Where are your parents?"
The corners of her lips turned downward at my question, tears filling her eyes. She shook her head, clueless.
"Okay," I said, picking her up. "Come with us."
"We'll have an announcement made," Vigo said, leading me down the aisle.
We circled the outskirts of the ground level until we arrived at a wide desk, behind which sat 2 men in smart black suits. One of them picked up a microphone and made an announcement for the child, his voice filling the entire stadium. About 3 minutes later, a young couple came racing toward us, their faces glowing with relief. The mother, a pretty blue-eyed blonde, looked at me with gratitude as I handed her the child.
"Thank you," she breathed,
before the 3 of them headed back to the seats. I could guess what she must have been feeling, because I knew what it was like to lose a child. 5 minutes later, another announcement was made for the commencement of the next fight. Everybody settled down, and Vigo and I resumed our previous watching position, near the glass doors. By the time the last fight was over, it was deep into the night. I wondered if Lee had intended for me to stay out this late. He had said that I could stay on with Vigo, though, so I guess that he must have been aware of how long these events could last. I had a spare key in my pants pocket anyway, so I wouldn't need to wake him in case he had fallen asleep. Nothing else noteworthy had happened in Vigo's policing department since we'd spotted the lost child. The 2 of us waited by the doors until the crowd had piled out, and we were alone in the arena except for a few employees tidying up. All the other wardens had left already. Vigo sighed, his eyes raking over the seats on the ground floor one last time, before turning to face the main entrance.
"We're done," he said.
His green eyes were glassy, and he looked tired. I pitied him. He not only had to drive me back to Lee's, but then he had his own journey to make to his cabin in the mountains. I wondered if on nights like this he ever regretted insisting on living so far away from everyone. We left the stadium and emerged in the square. It was still busy out here. The crowds were dallying, standing, and talking excitedly about the fight, while others were piling into eateries that lined the adjoining street. As we crossed the open plaza, a trio of men caught my eye. They were sitting squarely in front of the stadium's entrance, on one of the benches. They wore boots, and their general scruffy demeanor reminded me of the men we'd chased yesterday. On examining them closer, I realized that they even had the same triangular tattoos beneath their right eye. And they were staring right at me. As they rose to their feet, I tugged on Vigo's coat sleeve. I tried to point them out to him discreetly, which was difficult, considering their focus was zoomed in on me.
"Those guys,"
I whispered, raising myself on my tiptoes to get closer to Vigo's ear while turning my back on them.
"You see their tattoos? They're from the same gang who was involved in the kidnapping yesterday."
"Yes," Vigo said,
and stopped still to meet their gaze. His fists clenched, and then he began walking toward them, with me trailing along after him. He cleared his throat as we approached.
"Evening, gentlemen," he said tersely.
What might you be staring at?
It was unsettling that their attention remained on me, even as Vigo addressed them. Why me? What's so interesting about me? Their focus ought to be solely on Vigo and getting the hell out of here before getting themselves into trouble with him.
Something wrong? Vigo pressed.
The man in the middle with scraggly black hair looked steadily back at Vigo, not appearing the slightest bit intimidated.
Is there a problem? He asked coolly. Is it a crime to sit here?
No, Vigo replied, his eyes raked over their tattoos. But considering that you belong to the same gang as your friends who were arrested yesterday, I suggest you not get too cocky around here. Vigo's glare intensified. Know what I'm saying?
Not sure what you mean by gang, sir, he replied. You have no evidence that we belong to anything.
Vigo didn't bother arguing with him. These guys were gutsy, used to living on the edge of the law, pushing its borders as hard as they could. All three men's focus returned to me once more, their eyes dark and threatening, before they stalked off. Vigo drew in a shallow breath as they turned down an alleyway. Then he glanced down at me, a slight look of concern in his eyes. Concern which, in turn, unsettled me.
Why didn't you, like, arrest them or something? I asked. Isn't the tattoo evidence enough that they belong to the same gang?
It's not solid enough evidence. I can't simply arrest someone for having a tattoo, or for sitting and staring.
So you're just letting them go? I murmured, letting them wander off into the city.
You seem to forget that I don't make the rules around here, Vigo reminded me pointedly.
And why were they looking at me?
We can only speculate, can't we? He said, before closing his hand around my wrist and leading me away from the square.
We headed to the street that led back to the promenade.
We didn't manage to catch that guy who ran away, Vigo explained. The escapee likely told his friends about the wardens who got involved in the kidnapping, and, no doubt, also mentioned you. It's not every day that a woman takes down a man in an arrest. In fact, I bet it's never happened in all of this nation's history. At least, certainly not the way you did it.
His grip tightened on me as we entered the crowded street, as if afraid I might slip away somehow. He remained holding me just as firmly until we had left the bustling promenade and returned to the parking lot where he had left his motorbike. He opened up his seat and lowered his guns into the compartment.
So, I blew out, leaning against one of the bike's handles. What's happening tomorrow, then? Will I see you in the morning?
He shook his head. He refastened the seat lid before meeting my eyes.
No, I have a day off tomorrow.
A day off, huh? I guess that means you'll be fighting then?
I recalled a fight noted in the schedule I'd peeked at it in his gym. But since he had already told me he spent his spare time in fights, this was hardly an amazing guess on my part.
Yes, actually, he said. I'll be at training throughout the day, and then in the evening I have a fight.
Where?
Brunswick Arena.
Same small place as last time.
I see. I wet my lower lip. An awkward span of silence descended between us. Suddenly, neither of us was sure what to say, or apparently do, next. We stood just looking at each other. Then, with equal awkwardness, we started speaking at once.
I would...
You could... We both stalled, sharing a smirk.
Ladies first, Vigo said, his eyes warming with his expression.
I was just going to say that I, wouldn't mind tagging along with you tomorrow, if you don't mind.
He glanced down at his hands.
Yeah, I, seeing that you like fights so much, I was gonna say you could come to see my fight in the evening, if you wanted to. I could pick you up at about 7.
My smile broadened. It's a date.
Chapter 21 Vigo sped me back to Lee's home and stayed on his bike watching as I approached the house and made sure that I got inside okay.
Lee was still awake. He opened the door, emerging in his pajamas and carrying a mug of tea. I turned back toward Vigo to wave that he could go, but he was already riding off.
"How did the day go?"
Lee asked. We headed to the kitchen.
"You hungry?"
"No, thanks. And it went fine. Not much happened. Vigo had work to do in his office. Then we headed to the Rosen Cruz fight. We stayed until the end of the event, and then he brought me straight back." I poured myself a glass of water before sinking into a chair opposite Lee. "Oh, and he's off work tomorrow," I added. "But he's invited me to attend his fight in the evening. Said he'd come to pick me up around 7. He's going to get there a bit early."
"Brunswick?"
Lee asked. "Yeah." He sipped from his mug.
"What?"
I'd been expecting him to say something encouraging, like it was a good idea that I had accepted the invitation. I was supposed to be getting close to Vigo.
"Nothing," he said.
He gave me a furtive glance.
I don't want you to get carried away with this task."
"Carried away? What are you talking about?"
He sighed. "I just mean, keep sight of the goal. Why you're seeing him in the first place."
My throat tightened. The goal, in regards to Vigo, was something I had to forget. Lee didn't understand. For my brother's, Lee's, and Matrix's sake, I had to bury our plan for Vigo deep. Otherwise, I couldn't do what was required of me.
"As long as you keep that goal in mind," Lee went on, "you'll automatically do and say the right things, and everything will run smoothly."
I nodded, though I knew I couldn't do what he was asking of me. I would pull this off in my own way. I knew myself and how I worked better than him. I needed to change the subject.
"So what have you been up to?"
I asked him.
"Preparing the site," Lee replied, rubbing his forehead. He looked exhausted. "It's not a simple process, a bunch of hoops to jump through, and each step has to be carried out gradually, slowly and steadily, so that I don't cause suspicion in anyone. The attendees have been almost confirmed. Also, even King Maxon might make an appearance this year. There will be a lot of moving pieces when the night finally arrives. A lot of moving pieces, indeed." I nodded briefly again before getting to my feet.
"Yeah, well, I'm going to bed."
"Good night, Violet,"
Lee said, looking up and offering me a small smile as I moved past him. A smile I couldn't quite bring myself to return right now. I just wanted to shut myself in my room, throw myself into bed, and lose myself in sleep. I slept in late. By the time I came downstairs, Lee had left already for the city. I had another empty day ahead of me before this evening. I didn't want to risk taking Samuel out again. I had already pushed the law enough since arriving here. So I found myself heading up to Lee's room. I sat in front of his computer, which had been left unlocked, then navigated the map of Patris and stared at the 5 red moving dots. I could guess which one Vigo was. He was already at his gym. I wondered what he was practicing now, whether he even had a trainer, or if he always prepared for fights on his own. Then I found myself watching the other 4 dots and wondering who those people were. One of them was roaming the outskirts of the city, while the other 3 were near the city center, the latter, like Vigo, pretty stationary. I lost track of how much time I spent sitting in Lee's bedroom, but as afternoon bled into early evening, I returned to the garden, a pile of psychology books tucked beneath one arm. My attempts to focus on reading were shattered, however, when I heard it again. A woman's cry, coming from the other side of Lee's backyard fence. Number 32. Dropping my book, I hurried to the fence and listened, trying to catch the words that the upset woman was speaking. I was too far away to hear them. Her speech was muffled. I ran back inside the house to the kitchen and looked up at the clock. 7:10. Vigo should be arriving any time now, and then we could dash around the corner, and he could witness the noise for himself. But fearing it would stop again before Vigo got here, I began looking for some kind of recording device or a camera. I rummaged through all of Lee's cupboards, but failed to find anything I could use. Damn it! I should have asked Lee if he had a camera.
But then I heard a roaring engine entering the front drive of the house. Vigo had arrived. I thundered down the stairs and, grabbing a spare set of keys, raced out to him. He smiled faintly on seeing me, but his expression soon turned to surprise as I dashed toward him like I was being chased.
"Number 32," I hissed. "It started again."
I went quiet, straining to hear.
Yes, I could make it out from the front yard, although it was very faint.
"Let's get closer," Vigo said. "Get on the bike."
I climbed onto the seat behind him. Wrapping my arms around his waist, he tore up the road and stopped on the sidewalk opposite the house. We got off the motorbike and moved by foot to the other side of the road, where we ducked down beneath a line of bushes. We held our breath, listening as the noise continued. More smashing had started. More pleas. Our faces inches apart, our eyes locked as we concentrated.
"Okay," Vigo said after a minute. "I've heard enough. First thing tomorrow morning, I'll lodge a complaint and have a colleague take the man in for questioning."
"Good," I said, breathing out in relief. Hopefully, whatever was going on in there would be stopped sooner rather than later.
"You know, Violet,"
Vigo said as we began rolling back down the mountain,
"you should have become a warden."
Arriving at the Brunswick Arena, we descended to the basement and headed through one of the doors at the back of the auditorium. We passed down a narrow corridor and turned through another door into a small rectangular changing room equipped with a punching bag, a bench, a locker, towels, and other items of clothing. I also spotted a second door which led into an adjoined bathroom. Vigo dumped his bag on the bench before sliding off his coat. Turning his back on me, he removed his black t-shirt. My eyes roamed his chiseled back, watching his muscles ripple as he rummaged in his bag for a pair of black shorts, the same pair he'd worn to his previous fight. He scooped up a towel and moved to the bathroom.
"Taking a shower," he grunted. "Helps clear my head before a fight."
Vigo spent 20 minutes in the bathroom before emerging. His hair went straight and almost black when it was wet. The darkness of it somehow accentuated the sharpness of his eyes. His standing there, damp and bare-chested, made him look like some kind of wild, rugged warrior. And more attractive than I'd ever seen him. He reached into a pocket at the side of his bag and pulled out a hair tie, fastening his long hair back. Then he pulled out a roll of bandage from his bag and began wrapping it around his knuckles. He used tape to tighten it before standing up and approaching the punching bag. He began to hit it, his punches gradually building in power until the bag was swinging all over the place, hardly able to catch a break.
"Why don't you wear those thicker, tougher, fingerless gloves I've seen the other fighters wear?" I asked him. "Why only bandages? Aren't you more likely to get injured?"
"Yes," he replied, "but it's standard at my level of fighting."
That made no sense to me. "What do you mean?"
"It's what the crowd is used to watching at sub-level. A portion of them prefer sub-level fights for this reason. It's less regulated. More danger involved without hard gloves. More pain."
"Sounds grim," I muttered.
He chose not to comment. My eyes wandered again around the room. I noticed a pair of flat, cushioned gloves hanging from a hook near the locker. They were apparently designed for a trainer to catch punches. I reached for them and slid them on absent-mindedly as I flexed my wrists. "Hey," I said, standing and raising my gloved hands. "Want to have a go at punching me instead?" He paused and turned to me, his expression quickly turning incredulous.
"Why not?" I asked. "Nobody's watching."
He merely shook his head before resuming his focus on the punching bag. I quirked a brow.
"You don't think I can handle it?"
He didn't stop punching to face me this time as he replied through sharp breaths.
"I can't throw a punch at a woman."
I'd wanted to attempt to recreate the feeling I'd experienced in my gym sparring match with Vigo, but it seemed that wasn't going to happen. Not wanting to be pushy, I sat down again, glaring at my gloves. Still, I couldn't help but inform him.
I've fought girls as strong as men before.
My mind turned back to Dina. Not as strong as Vigo, of course, but he didn't need to know that.
It doesn't matter how strong you are. I saw how you took down that guy in the street. I know you're skilled. But if you ask me to punch you, it wouldn't be a punch. It would be a nudge, a light jab at the most.
He worked himself up into another flurry of punches until he appeared to be satisfied that he'd warmed up enough. He backed away from the punching bag, tightening his bandages.
Okay, how about I punch you?
It wouldn't be the same as in the gym, but it would be better than nothing. Vigo smirked.
That I could allow.
I rose to my feet, removing the training gloves from my hands and handing them to him. But on taking them from me, he discarded them on the floor. Apparently he was going to use his bare palms as my target. Suit yourself. He dipped into his bag and retrieved a roll of bandage. He moved to me, reaching for my hands, but I shook my head.
Come on, I said, rolling my eyes. We're only going to be at it for a few minutes. You're going to have to leave for the fight soon.
Still, he looked reluctant.
And what will I tell your husband if you go home to him with bruised knuckles? I already returned you once with grazed knees.
My knuckles aren't made of flower petals, I replied.
He hesitated a moment more before resuming his position in front of me.
All right, he said, the corners of his mouth twitching in a half-smile.
He raised a daring brow.
We've got 10 minutes. Have at me.
A rush ran through my body as I clenched my fists. Although he wouldn't see me eye to eye, Vigo was still a dream sparring partner. I had been one of the toughest girls in my defense classes. A lot of the other girls couldn't take blows as hard as I could throw them, and I'd often ended up partnered with Ms. Dale for that reason. But with Vigo, I didn't have to hold back. He could take anything I threw at him. Plus, I didn't have any facial hair to worry about keeping in place. I approached him, aiming my first swipe at his right palm, which was rock hard.
But the contact felt good, like scratching an itch.
I threw a punch at his left palm, then right again, before moving on to a kicking combination. As my right foot rose to his stomach, he blocked it, firmly enough that I didn't reach him, but not hard enough to cause a bruise. When I moved to punch him again, he surprised me by catching my wrist. He spun me around, my back against his chest, where he held me in a firm lock. I hadn't expected him to elevate the game. I suppose this was as close as he was going to get in treating me equally in terms of fighting. Having been trained to get out of this kind of hold before, my next move was wired in my brain. It came as mere instinct for my right leg to slip backward and jerk forward. I caught him at the back of his right knee. He hadn't been expecting that either. He lost balance, causing the two of us to tumble to the floor. I quickly scrambled to gain an advantage while he lay on his back. Gripping his arms and pressing them hard against the floor, I straddled his hips. I leaned over, my face leveling with his. As our eyes met, we both broke out in a tense laugh.
Surrender? I asked him.
I felt his stomach muscles tauten against my thighs. He narrowed his eyes.
Is that what you think this is?
I didn't get a chance to respond or see what he'd do next, as a sharp rapping at the door brought reality spiraling back. Vigo cursed. I leaped off him, and he stood up just in time before the door swung open.
Being in Patras, there wouldn't have been an awful lot of ways a married woman and an unmarried man could have explained that position.
Catching my breath, I smoothed down my top and tried to pretend I'd just risen from the bench when a white-haired man poked his head through the doorway. Surprise registered in his eyes at seeing me here, but he quickly focused on Vigo.
"You're on in 20 minutes, he said.
Yes, I know, Vigo said tightly.
I could see he was trying to steady his breathing, too.
And was there a slight flush to his cheeks?
I felt like there might be to mine.
Good, good.
With one last glance toward me, the man backed out of the room. My cheeks definitely heated as Vigo and I were left alone again.
That had been close.
I coughed, my throat clear, and sat back down on the bench. Vigo didn't start punching the bag again. Avoiding eye contact, he moved into the bathroom,
where he splashed his face with water and stood in front of the mirror for a while. Then he returned to the room and paced up and down. I watched him while his focus was on the floor, and wondered whether nerves ever bothered a man like Viggo Croft after all the fights he had experienced. "Have you ever lost a fight?" I asked him. That might not have been the most sensitive question to ask a fighter minutes before he was due to step inside the cage, but Viggo didn't strike me as the superstitious type. He shook his head. A grin returned to my face.
"Then let's not make tonight a first."
Finally, he looked at me again. His expression was dark, though I sensed a smile hiding somewhere behind it.
"I don't intend to."
The next few minutes slipped through our fingers like sand. A round of boos echoed down the corridor. Vigo's opponent must have entered the arena. And then the elderly man was at the door again.
"Time to roll," he announced excitedly.
I stood up and followed Viggo and the man out of the room. Viggo was my guardian, and even though he'd be in the cage, I was supposed to follow him as closely as possible. When we headed down the corridor, however, and reached the wide-open door to the arena, I had to hang back with the elderly man while Viggo stepped into the spotlight. The audience exploded. I caught Viggo drawing in a light breath before stalking down the aisle. The spotlight followed him, and I was able to move closer to the darkened doorway without worrying about being spotted. Viggo climbed into the cage opposite his opponent, a guy with ebony skin and cropped black hair. Going by appearance alone, they looked a very even match. Viggo, perhaps, slightly at a disadvantage. His opponent was a little taller.
"May I ask who you are, ma'am?"
the white-haired man, who was still standing opposite me by the doorway, asked.
"Mrs. Bertrand," I replied quickly, my eyes reverting to the fight. I didn't want to miss any of it.
"Oh, I see. And how do you know Viggo?"
"My husband appointed him as my second guardian."
The man stopped talking to me after that. My spine tingled as the deep vox man announced the start of the fight. His voice was almost drowned out by the cheering crowd.
I wish that I could get closer as the two men began to circle each other. I was still worrying about Cad or his parents spotting me. The chances that they'd be at the fight were probably slim, but I couldn't take any risks. I had brought my cap with me, however. If that had been enough to get by at the event the night before, it should be enough here, too.
"Excuse me," I said, taking my leave from the elderly man. I moved down the aisle, approaching the cage. A security guard stopped me as I reached within a few feet.
"Mr. Croft is my guardian,"
I told him before he could say anything. He let me pass and stand right next to the cage, where the water was kept and the attendants waited. Up close was more exhilarating than I could have imagined. I could see every detail, every flicker of emotion in their eyes, every bead of sweat. Viggo's opponent, Rod Ruin Ryland, according to the trim on his blue shorts, took aim at Viggo first. Viggo dodged before countering with a right hook, which caught the side of Rod's face with a painful smack. Rod skipped back. The crowd yelled. Somehow, I felt that this was going to be another short fight. Rod approached again, more cautiously, only to quickly swerve backward as Viggo launched a side kick. Viggo took the offensive, Rod backing away further. I could tell that Rod was trying to stay on his feet, jerking away whenever Viggo stooped or stepped closer. Rod clearly didn't want Viggo taking him to the ground, but that appeared to be exactly what Vigo's game plan was. Viggo advanced, closing in like a panther, until Rod was up against the wall of the cage. Then he hurled himself at the guy's knees, going straight for the takedown. Rod desperately tried to keep his balance, but he only lasted a few seconds before his back went slamming down against the floor, Viggo on top of him. The audience howled, and I found myself shouting along with them as Viggo proceeded to smother Rod's defensive punches and catch hold of his arms. "Yes! Come on!" I bellowed. I wondered if Viggo could hear me among the sea of other screams. Rod proved to be more of a veteran on the ground than I had given him credit for. He squirmed and twisted beneath Viggo like an anaconda, and after about 2 minutes of intense grappling, to my dismay, he managed to free himself. The two men shot to their feet,
and resumed circling one another, though Rod was visibly tired by the grappling. His chest heaved, and he bought himself some time by distancing himself a few steps. Vigo sensed his weakness. He swept forward and broke through Rod's defense, catching his nose with a hard punch. Rod staggered, then swung back with a flurry of quick but rather sloppy punches.
It did the job of fighting Vigo back a few feet.
Then, as I sensed Vigo was about to go in for another flooring, the bell rang, announcing the end of the round. A smile lit up my face as Vigo stalked toward my end of the cage. He noticed me as one of the attendants handed him a water flask through the bars. Vigo took a swig, and I felt a twinge in my chest as his Adam's apple bobbed, the water gushing down his throat. But I pushed the guilt down. Down, down, down. Deep, until it stopped existing. After handing his flask back to the attendant, Vigo caught my eye again. He gave me the slightest wink before returning to the center of the cage for the second round. Cool as ice, Vigo was. I hoped that Vigo would finish his opponent in this round. Rod didn't start out nearly as confident as he had in the previous one. Vigo, on the other hand, went in far more aggressively. He forced Rod to the edge of the cage with a slew of well-timed punches before finally opening up another opportunity to sweep Rod to the ground. This time, they fell in a peculiar way, twisting in mid-fall so that Vigo ended up landing on his back and Rod's back against his chest. Rod struggled to twist around to gain the advantage of being face forward and on top, but Vigo was too swift. His arm wrapped around the man's neck, pressing down hard against his throat and strangling him. Rod writhed and attempted to punch Vigo in the head, but Vigo held on tight. Rod even managed to roll over, but Vigo wrapped his legs around his waist, refusing to release his grip on Rod's neck. Rod managed to stand briefly before staggering and falling face forward. Vigo now on top. He served punches with his left hand while choking harder with his right arm, all the while maintaining control over the rest of Rod's body with his expert legwork. And then it was over. Rod, draining of oxygen, tapped out. The audience celebration was deafening. It seemed even louder than at Vigo's previous fight. Vigo stood up, his eyes sweeping fleetingly around the room, over his adoring fans, before he stood by the referee. Rod's team was hovering over the fighter, along with a physician, checking that he was all right. And then he rose, albeit on shaky feet, to stand on the other side of the referee. The booming voice announced Vigo to be the undisputed winner. The referee held Vigo's arm aloft. The second he let go, Vigo was heading back to his cage exit. He climbed out, his feet hitting the floor in front of me. His skin shining with sweat, he swept past me, catching my hand at the last moment and pulling me down the aisle alongside him toward the exit. This sent the females in the crowd into a frenzy. Wolf whistles abounded, every one of them obviously thinking that I was Vigo's new girl. Thank God Lee and I weren't actually in a relationship. If he'd been watching this, he probably would have been pissed. I was just glad that I had my back to the crowd and they couldn't see my face. We entered the corridor, the noise of the audience fading a little as Vigo led me straight back to his room. He shut the door behind us before he approached the bench. He picked up his towel and wiped down his face, chest, and torso.
"Good one," I said.
"Yeah," he muttered, not attempting even a smidgen of enthusiasm. He gathered his clothes and shut himself in the bathroom. After he turned on the shower, there came another knock at the door. I doubted Vigo had been able to hear it over the running water. I wasn't sure what to do, answer it or ignore it. I decided to answer it. Opening the door, I was expecting perhaps to see the elderly man come to congratulate Vigo. But instead, standing in the doorway was a middle-aged man with sleek brown hair and wearing a smart gray suit. He was holding a black briefcase, attached to which was a badge with black bold letters, PFL.
"And who are you, madam?" he asked,
No doubt he'd witnessed my exit with Vigo.
Mrs. Bertrand, Vigo is my second guardian.
Ah, he stole a peek inside the room. And is Mr. Croft available?
He's in the bathroom, but I doubt he'll be long. What do you want to speak to him about?
The man's brows lowered. Apparently, as a woman, I had just asked one too many questions.
I'll just wait inside here, if that's okay, he said.
I guess, I muttered grudgingly.
I led him inside before closing the door behind him. He took a seat on the bench while I found myself standing outside the bathroom door. After 5 minutes of awkward silence, Vigo emerged, wearing his day clothes. As I was right near the bathroom door, his eyes were on me first. He frowned and looked like he was about to ask why I was standing in this odd place, when his eyes fell on the intruder. I was surprised when the first thing Vigo did was groan.
Mr. Sands, he said. I told you no.
Mr. Sands stood up, offering a hand to Vigo, which Vigo promptly ignored.
And I do greatly apologize for the intrusion, Mr. Sands said smoothly, looking apologetic for nothing. But we last spoke over a month ago. That was quite a few fights ago. I thought there might be a possibility that you changed your mind about joining the Power Fight League since then.
I haven't, Vigo snapped, throwing his towel against the bench.
I know you've said you don't want the fame,
Mr. Sands bulldozed on.
But surely by now you have already gained a very large following. After a certain number of fans, it hardly even makes much difference.
My jaw dropped. Mr. Sands was voicing my thoughts exactly. Vigo shook his head, stubborn as an ox.
No, I'm not interested. Would you just take a look at the contract the PFL is proposing, Mr. Croft? I took the liberty of preparing this before coming to your fight this evening. I tried to address a number of the concerns you brought up in our previous talk, and have come up with some creative solutions that might make your rise to celebrity less steep. For example, we could agree not to broadcast the events on television or radio. Make your fights only a live event, similar to what you're already used to.
Wow, these people are desperate to have him. Still, Vigo shook his head. Although this was really none of my business, I couldn't help but blurt out,
Really, Mr. Croft? They're bending over backward to have you.
Vigo's scowl deepened as his eyes shot to me.
You could earn, like, a ton more, I went on, disregarding his glare. And they say they won't even broadcast it so widely.
Plus, you'll start wearing proper gloves and not having your hands constantly beat up.
Now Mr. Sands looked interested in what I had to say.
Mrs. Bertrand, he said, his face shining with self-serving gratitude. You truly have a point. Mr. Croft, I implore you to at least read through the contract before rejecting the move to PFL again so swiftly.
Mr. Sands held out 3 sheets of paper. Vigo dragged a hand down his face. He threw me another hard stare before slipping the contract from Mr. Sands' hands and dumping himself down on the bench to read it. I approached him tentatively, peering over his shoulder. After scanning through the 3 pages, I was nervous about what Vigo was going to do. Reject again?
The contract's only for one fight, I said.
Yes, Vigo muttered. I can read. So you could back out of the whole thing easily if you truly hated it,
Mr. Sands interjected.
Vigo swallowed. I think you should take it, I said quietly.
He perused the contract 5 minutes longer before he slapped it down on the bench and rose to his feet. He inhaled, running a hand through his hair. Then he shook his head in resignation.
Okay, one fight. I'll do it.
Yes!
Fantastic! Mr. Sands said, positively bouncing on his feet. He was quick to draw out a pen from his briefcase and hand it to Vigo, who moved back over to the bench to sign it. Mr. Sands didn't stay a lot longer after that.
I won't detain you further now, he said. You must want to rest after the fight. But I have your number, Mr. Croft. I'll be in touch tomorrow morning.
Vigo nodded, the shadow of a grimace still lingering on his face. As Mr. Sands left the room, he clenched his jaw as if he had just tasted something bad. I let him stew in his own thoughts as he packed up his possessions and donned his trench coat.
You ready?
He asked gruffly, casting me a fleeting look. Yes.
Then let's get out of here.
I followed him to the door. Instead of taking a left turn, which would lead back to the arena, he took a right, which brought us to a rusty stairwell. It took us up to a single door, which led out to a quiet street around the back of the building. He pulled down his hood so that it shadowed his face, while I kept my hat low on my forehead as we made our way to his motorbike. As he stowed his bag beneath the seat, I dared break the silence.
I have a new name for you, by the way,
I said. He groaned, slamming the seat shut. He climbed onto the motorbike, and I slid on behind him, wrapping my arms around his waist.
Do you want to know what it is?
I'm sure you're going to tell me anyway, he grunted.
Vigo the Victor Croft.
He kicked off and joined the road. Beneath the roar of the engine, I caught him mutter,
You have a nerve, Violet Bertrand.
Chapter 22. There was bad traffic on the way back to Lee's. Apparently, there had been a major crash on one of the highways, which caused a ripple effect of solid jams throughout the city. Vigo ended up completely retracing our route, even back past the Brunswick, to take a longer route home. He rode through the city closer to his side of the mountains, northwest of the palace. It was a relief to leave the noise and smoke behind as we climbed the mountains. The fresh air tinged with the scent of pine was bliss. It was a mild night. Vigo got hot beneath his coat at one point. I helped peel it off his shoulders and kept it on my lap so he wouldn't have to stop to remove it, leaving me to feel the muscles beneath his t-shirt as I resumed my hold on him. Vigo smelled like the pines. Rugged, virile. Maybe it was because he lived out here. The ends of his loosened hair touched my forehead as I rested my cheek against his back. I felt sheltered, safe. Truth be told, I was feeling sleepy now, too, and I closed my eyes for the rest of the journey. By the time we thundered into Lee's drive, it was later than Lee had been expecting. The kitchen lights were on, the blinds half closed. I got off the motorbike.
Good night, I whispered.
Night, he murmured.
His eyes glinted in the moonlight as I held his gaze a few seconds longer before turning and heading to the house. As Vigo had done the night before, he waited until Lee had opened up before riding off. Unlike the night before, Lee was still dressed in his work clothes, a navy blue suit.
What took you so long? He asked as he closed the door after me. His face was tense.
A ton of traffic, I said. We had to go a roundabout way to get here. We moved into the kitchen. When he offered me dinner, I accepted it. As he went about heating something up, he asked,
So, how was Vigo? What did you talk about?
He won in the second round, I said. It was great. I waited right by the cage and watched up close. I wore my cap, of course. And after the fight, some agent from the PFL came to see him in his changing room. I've been trying to encourage Vigo to move up to his level, and when the agent offered him a new contract tonight, he finally accepted it. The spoon Lee had been using to stir a saucepan dropped to the stove with a clatter. He spun around to face me, his expression shocked.
You encouraged him to do that? What were you thinking?
I stared at him in confusion, my lips parting. I don't understand.
Why would you encourage him to move up to the PFL? It didn't occur to you that this could mess up his entire schedule? His training, his fights? For heaven's sake, Violet, I warned you not to lose focus.
I found myself stumbling for words, unsure of what to say. Lee was right. I hadn't given the slightest thought what consequences might ensue if he joined the PFL. His entire schedule that I'd gone to the trouble of noting down could be turned on its head. For all we knew, Vigo might be offered a PFL fight on the night of the banquet.
As it stood, Lee went on, that night was completely blank for him.
He even had a night off his duties as a warden. I checked. He was to be replaced by someone else that evening. We had this all battened down, damn it!
Lee sank down in a chair, running his fingers nervously through his hair. My breath quickened.
What had I just done?
Of course Vigo might have accepted the contract anyway. Mr. Sands and the contract might have been enough to convince him. Though, I couldn't help but feel that my encouragement had played a part in it. Vigo was a stubborn man. He might not have even heard Mr. Sands out if I hadn't been there encouraging him to listen.
Oh, this is a mess, Lee breathed. A complete mess.
Did they discuss the next fight in the changing room? Any kind of schedule at all? I shook my head. No, the agent just said that he would be in touch tomorrow morning.
He might even shift gyms for this. How are we going to figure out his updated schedule?
I could just ask him when the fight is. Lee let out a breath, still looking irritated. The smell of burning filled the room. Whatever Lee was heating up was getting ruined, but he could hardly bring himself to care. I had lost all my appetite now anyway.
Crap. What have I done?
I sat in my chair frozen, watching Lee tentatively as he buried his head in his hands. Then, with a deep sigh, he raised his head and looked at me.
I'm just trying to understand how you could have possibly thought that encouraging him was a good idea.
I was thinking of Vigo, of him being paid more and treated better.
I'm sorry, I said. I've been trying to make friends with him, and I slipped up.
We can't afford slip-ups.
And do I need to remind you that my life is on the line just as much as yours is in this?
I know, I said through clenched teeth, even though I seem to be the one taking on major risks all the time. I felt like snapping something back at him, but I held my tongue. I knew I'd messed up. Lee stood up and turned off the heat beneath the sizzling pan before proceeding to throw the food in the trash. Even though I no longer wanted to eat, I remained in my seat while Lee prepared a second dinner for me. When he placed a plate in front of me, I picked at the food, hardly able to swallow. I felt like I was losing myself on this mission. I pushed the food away after I'd eaten all that I could and drank from the glass of water he'd set down for me. Lee's mood quieted.
Okay, he said, sighing. Look, Violet, I know this is hard. Trust me, I do. And we all make mistakes. But you've got to stay focused. Everyone is counting on you.
I managed a nod.
A reunion with my brother is on the line, too.
I wasn't sure whether he knew that. Biting his lower lip, he stood up.
Okay, I'm heading to bed.
He began moving toward the door, but as he passed my seat, he stopped. He glanced down at me, still in my chair, a furtive look in his eyes. Unexpectedly, he stooped. A second later, his moist lips were pressing against the side of my neck, beneath my right ear, in a firm, chaste kiss. And then, just as suddenly, he drew away.
Good night, he managed, before sweeping out of the kitchen.
I stared at the empty doorway in a daze, my fingers raising to the side of my neck. I felt the skin where his lips had been.
What was that about?
Why would he do it?
I struggled for the next 10 minutes to make sense of Lee's kiss. It had come so abruptly, so unexpectedly, from nowhere. In the end, there was only one thing I could conclude.
Maybe I'm not the only one losing focus.
Chapter 23. My sleep was fitful that night. A recurring nightmare plagued me, a nightmare about a young boy sitting in a rowboat in the middle of a river, being swept away by a current. The harrowing feeling of being able to do nothing but stand and stare remained with me after I woke up drenched in sweat. I glanced out of the window, whose blinds I'd forgotten to draw last night. The horizon glowed orange with the first signs of dawn. I checked the clock by my bedside. 5:30 a.m. I breathed in deeply through my nose. I wished that I could take a pill and forget about everything,
Become a robot? I grimaced to myself. King Maxon's Benuxapane pills didn't seem like such a bad idea right now. I took a hot shower, which helped to calm me. Like with Vigo, running water had a way of clearing my head. I was no stranger to adversity. I'd been through harder times than this before and pulled through. I'd pull through again now. We didn't have long to go anyway. And then this would all be over. After finishing in the shower and dressing, I didn't bother to dry my hair. I went downstairs. The kitchen was empty, but I could hear Lee upstairs. His shower was running. I fixed myself some honey and ginger tea and settled down at the table. Samuel came in to greet me with a groggy woof before allowing me to stroke his head. It was raining outside, the first rain since I'd arrived. By the time I'd finished my tea, Lee creaked down the staircase and emerged in the kitchen. The first few seconds of his arrival were the worst. My stomach somersaulted as last night replayed in my mind. He also seemed awkward. He murmured a quick good morning before busying himself by the sink. It appeared that he was going to act like the kiss hadn't happened. "So, what's on the agenda today?" I asked him. I was wondering what time Vigo would come for me, though he wouldn't have called yet. It was still too early. "You're not going to see Vigo today," Lee's answer came. I stared at the back of his head as he hunched over the sink. "What? Why?" I wanted to blurt, but I held back. Why was I so bothered anyway, whether I saw Vigo or not? It was the abrupt reminder of Lee's power over me that threw me off. "I've already left a message on his phone," he said. "All right," I replied, trying to sound unruffled. I needed to cooperate with Lee, not fight him, for everyone's sake. "Instead," he went on, "you're going to help me with something down at the lab." He turned away from the sink and sat opposite me at the table with a glass of water, still not meeting my eyes directly. He reached into his right pocket and pulled out a phone. "Alistair is due to make a call in about 1 minute." Barely a few seconds after Lee had spoken, the phone rang. The number flashed up as Mariana, apparently a disguise, presumably in case Lee's phone ever got stolen. Lee picked it up and pressed it to his ear. "Yes?" He uttered a few more yeses and fines before handing the phone to me. "Yeah?" I said.
"Good to hear from you, Violet,"
Alistair's pitchy voice replied. "Things are going fine," I told him flatly before he could ask the question. "There's really not a lot to talk about. The banquet is drawing closer, and we're preparing for it as best we can."
"Good, good. We're very glad to hear that."
A pause.
"You'll be seeing your brother soon, and you're making your nation proud, Violet. Never forget that."
I answered with silence. Alistair requested to be handed back to Lee, and I handed back the phone wordlessly for Lee to wrap up the conversation.
"So, about today," Lee went on. "We need to leave for the lab in half an hour. I'll explain more on the journey."
I stayed in my seat while Lee left the kitchen. I heard him open the front door, then came his crunching footsteps in the driveway. The garage door creaked, and then an engine sounded. Not a motorcycle. It sounded more like a car. I headed to the window to see a brown five-seater roll into the center of the drive. Lee killed the engine, got out, and hurried back to the house. I met him in the hallway. "I didn't know you had a car," I commented.
"I rented it yesterday," he said. "Forecast predicted it would be rainy, and we can't afford to get wet today."
He eyed me.
"If you're ready, we might as well leave now, though we'll need to fix you up with your disguise first."
My curiosity, or rather, apprehension, was growing regarding what exactly Lee had in store for us. I followed him up to my bedroom where my costume was kept. Things felt awkward again as he got up close to put on my wig and help me with my facial hair and contact lenses. But his expression remained businesslike. I changed into the bodysuit before pulling on a deep brown suit.
Then, after popping some deep vox pills and checking my appearance with Lee, we left the house.
"You're sure this costume is a good idea?"
I asked as we got in the car. I felt uneasy about going to the lab dressed like this. People had seen me before as a woman. They might recognize me even in this disguise. Plus, how would Lee explain who I was if we bumped into someone?
"Don't worry," Lee replied. "I've thought about it."
Watching the road slip away beneath us, my eyes glazed over as we rolled down the mountain. I tried not to worry, but failed. I didn't like feeling dependent on anyone, man or woman. In fact, I abhorred it. I hated not being clear on the plan in my own head. But it wasn't worth causing more tension between Lee and me. I had to keep biting my tongue.
"This will be over soon."
"Since it's early on a public holiday, the late King Patrick's coronation," Lee said, "the city won't be crowded, and the lab should be mostly empty. You're going to install one of the explosives we'll need for the lab. The one we require to blast open the egg's glass casing." My heart skipped a beat.
"Are you serious?"
"Quite serious.
I have no idea how to handle explosives."
"Again, don't worry. I'll advise you what to do."
"What about the other explosives?" I asked him. "Have you installed those already?"
"No, but the others I figured out how to handle without you. It's just this one you need to take charge of." Lee proceeded to tell me in detail about where and how to correctly install the explosive device. Arriving at the lab, Lee punched in the code to get us in the parking lot and parked as close to the entrance as he could. He reached an arm around the back of my seat and removed an unassuming brown bag, which he placed between my legs. Then he handed me a pager, which I stuffed into my pocket. Now all that remained was action. He gave me a firm nod before stepping out of the car. I watched Lee hurry to the building through the rain. He let himself inside, and his shadow disappeared behind the glass. I stared down at the pager. In about 15 minutes, he should be buzzing me. I kept watch of the digital clock above the dashboard, my fingers clenching around the handle of the bag. Soon only 1 minute was left. 30 seconds. 10 seconds. The pager buzzed 5 seconds late. I took my cue to leave. I pulled on a raincoat that had been stuffed inside the back pouch of Lee's seat, positioned my hood low over my face. I slipped the bag beneath my arm, making sure the overcoat covered it, then exited the car and hurried to the entrance. Lee was waiting behind the glass doors, and after he let me inside, we immediately parted ways. I headed toward the staircase that was located near the elevators, while Lee headed to the room behind the reception desk. I scaled the stairs as fast as I could, breathing hard by the time I arrived on the top floor. Stepping out into the corridor, I recognized it from my previous visit. I no longer had to keep the hood over my head here. Lee's job during the minutes I'd waited in the car had been to stall the cameras recording in the entrance area, the staircase, and up here. Just for 15 minutes. I had to be fast. As I reached the door of the lab, I buzzed Lee. A few seconds later, the door clicked open, Lee manipulating it from the downstairs control panel. Stepping inside, I held my breath and gazed around. The lab was empty, eerily quiet. I let the door close behind me before working my way toward the glass cabinet at the back of the room, toward the silver egg. This damn egg. There had really better be something valuable in it. By using the word installing, Lee had made this job sound far more complicated than it actually was, at least for today. All I had to do was drop off a package of small explosives and hide them here so that they would be ready for the night of the party. He had advised me where I should put them. My eyes panned to the light above me. It was wide, flat, and circular, and fixed into the ceiling. Sliding a hand into the front pocket of the bag, I drew out a few screwdrivers before standing on a table. I raised my arms and began trying to find the right fit. I found one that slotted into the screws perfectly, though they were tightly fit. It wasn't a quick process to unscrew all the screws, especially since my nerves kept causing the screwdriver to slip in my hands.
I feared I wouldn't make the 15 minutes in time. I exhaled in relief as the light finally came off. I glanced down at the clock by the door. 7 minutes left. I placed the light carefully on the table. The last thing I needed was for it to shatter. Then I dug another hand in.